Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by Ironman U, EverySite.com, the coolest new technology around. RunCatalina.com, Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Our next guest, one of the best coaches around, Mr. Jim Vance, joins us. Jimmy, how are you doing?
I'm great, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Always love chatting with you because you're always doing cool stuff. Now, you've got a couple of books coming out, right? You got Triathlon 2.0, Data-Driven Performance Training, and then you got Run with Power. When are these guys coming out?
Triathlon 2.0 is scheduled to be released tomorrow, actually.
So wow, perfect timing.
and then Run with Power will be out May 1st.
But I think
looking last I saw on Amazon, Triathlon 2.0 is already sold out on Amazon.
So it
jumped to like number 5 in all their triathlon related categories. I think it's the number 1 new release there. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, they're still selling it. People are gonna have to wait a little longer if they go through them. But they can buy it through any other major retailer.
That's got to be. Is that your first book to sell out on Amazon?
I don't remember quite what Triathlon Science did at the time. So it's hard for me to say.
Yeah.
I believe it probably is, yes.
Good for
you. It's my first solo book, too. So that's, I probably have paid a little bit more attention to it because it's been 100% on me.
I love that. So take me back. You went from, you were a professional in triathlon and third in Ironman Florida?
Correct.
Yeah, so third at Ironman Florida, and you probably got to a point where you realized, okay, I got third at Ironman Florida. I don't think I'm winning Kona anytime soon. What's the game plan moving forward? Transitioning from being a professional athlete to being a coach, how did you make that transformation?
It really was pretty natural because I had been a school teacher before I left to race triathlon professionally. I was literally teaching physical education in San Diego Unified at some elementary schools.
Yeah.
So the teaching, on my degree was physical and health education, kindergarten through 12th grade through the University of Nebraska. So I was always kind of a teacher at heart, and I really, really enjoyed teaching. And of course, I was having success right away. Fairly quick. I mean, I think I started the sport in my first time doing the sport, I want to say it was 03, and by 04, I'd won my first Xterra Amateur World title, and then 05, I won an ITU Age Group World title. And by the end of 05, I was full-time pro. So things went very quickly, so people naturally, just kind of gravitated towards me. And I was able to, they asked me a lot of questions, and I realized, okay, there's a lot of things that need to be taught here. And I did a lot of speaking, and people naturally started wanting me to coach. And then after a while, I started to realize I had a pretty decent skill at it. And then I was learning more and more. Friel was actually one of the guys who was coaching me towards the end of my career. And Friel was actually telling me, hey, why don't you come do this camp with me in Mallorca or over in, I had another opportunity to go to Italy and Tuscany and the Canary Islands and other places. And he says, well, why don't you come do these with me? I told him, no, I got to train for this race. He's like, well, I'll pay you X and X amount, for these. And I started doing the math. I'm like, that's more money than I would make in prize money at that race or close to it.
Yeah, without the risk.
Yeah.
Without traveling and schlepping my bike and possibly having a flat and getting nothing.
Exactly. So it didn't take long, and I was like, I think my priorities are a little backwards here, and maybe I need to probably give this more of my attention. And it's been great. And so when I left the sport, I actually was able to return to my roots. I started a junior program, so I could help a lot, you know, a lot of teenagers, high schoolers, and middle schoolers.
Here in San Diego, that was tri-juniors?
Formula Endurance now, yes.
Okay.
And, but yeah, it's been a great opportunity for me. And then of course, being with Friel, he's been such a mentor, greatest selling endurance author of all time. And he's actually been editing my book, he forwarded Triathlon 2.0, and he's been editing, Run with Power. In fact, he just sent me back chapter 8 tonight. And, so far there's only 10 chapters in Run with Power, and he's very, very pleased. Told me he was very impressed. He's been very impressed so far. So that's been great. To get that type of endorsement from such a successful author like him is pretty rewarding.
When you talk about running with power, I think people understand cycling with power. But running with power is sort of the opposite, right? Isn't the whole idea to run with as economically as possible?
Yeah, so it's definitely not as simple as a cycling powerman.
Right.
There's much more complexities to it. You know, a cycling power meter is just actually measuring what's effectively transferred to the bike. So every number that every watt that you can generate that gets transferred to the bike is great. That's the great thing. When we run, we do a lot of work. And actually, we actually do a lot of other work on a bike. Power is just a work rate. We do a lot of other work on a bike that's just not being measured. Excuse me, the only part that's actually being shown on your screen is the part that's being measured that's effectively applied to the bike when you look on your power meter. So there's other things that you're doing that's work being done, but you're only getting that bit of the info. So the challenge in that, well, the great thing about that is eliminates a lot of noise and says, okay, this is all good. So more is better. Well, in running power meters, there's so many movements that we have to do that aren't necessarily productive. Like you have to lift yourself off the ground. Well, you have to do that in order to run. But there comes a point where some of us lift ourselves up more so up than we do forward. Or we move ourselves laterally more so than we want to or need to. So it more becomes not just about the watts that you produce, but what's the pace or the speed that you go at for the watts that you produce. So in all my research on that, I actually studied and came out with a metric that I call efficiency index. And all it is it's what's the speed that you produce in meters per minute per watt that you produce. So basically you take the speed that the athlete produces in meters per minute, divide that by the average power, and that gives you the speed per watt. So that's kind of the real key metric in power. So two guys can literally be running along at the same pace, and one is producing a lot more watts than the other one. And it's even relative to their size. It can't, size and mass certainly play a role, but it's mostly, okay, who's actually running more efficiently? But even then there's complexities, because the most efficient runner doesn't win the race. The fastest runner does.
Right.
So you have to take that into account. So you have to figure out at what point does efficiency actually play a role and watts play a role. And so then that's really what the book goes into, explain how to train and use these metrics. There's a few other things that I talked about in there, so a few other metrics I created.
So one of the things when you first started your junior program in triathlon, I think you realized that, I mean, obviously everything starts with the swim. You got to be a great swimmer to move on. And it seemed like that for people to get into triathlon, you know, your swim specific guys and your run specific guys, those coaches weren't necessarily wanting their kids to get into triathlon, right? It was a little limiting from that. So you become a swim coach. And from your swim programs, have you developed triathletes who, you know, came in to be swimmers, and then you realize they could be good triathletes?
A little bit. Yeah, you definitely get some of that. It's the one challenge is you don't, you know, you have to convince a lot of people. And certainly families, you know, get into a routine like, okay, we're a swim family now.
Right.
You know, there's family. We're a soccer family. So you're always going to find that challenge. But what I've actually done is I've started to step back a little bit more, and I've, you know, I even spoke with some people at USA Triathlon, and their philosophy, some of their elite development people, in their whole chain and things have been much more about, Jim, we want quality over quantity. Don't just start taking in a lot of kids, you know, and figuring that out. They're like, be specific, be targeted, figure out who really deserves your attention, who's committed and who's doing that. So I'm actually quite a small team still, relatively speaking. You know, I think right now we're about 20 kids, which is not a huge team by any stretch of the imagination, but I think we finished ninth in the team standings overall, you know, going against, and we're probably the smallest team in the top 10. So, you know, if we looked at it from a point per athlete in the team standings, we'd be one of the best overall. So it really is a focused thing, because triathlon is such a commitment, and it is really, I can tell you, it's getting more competitive every year. It's getting crazy.
So when we look at the success the Americans have had this year, when you look at Sarah Groff and you look at Gwen Jorgensen and Katie Zafaris, you know, Katie and Gwen came from other sports, right? She swam for 3 years at Wisconsin and ran last couple of years at Wisconsin, and then was really identified as a triathlete. Next thing you know, she's the best in the world. And Katie comes from a steeplechase background and was, for most of this year, was ranked second in the world. For us to build Olympic caliber triathletes, that model can work, but it seems like we really have to get them. If you look at Alistair Brownlee and Johnny Brownlee and Javier Gomez, they started when they were, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. Are we moving in that direction for the U.S.?
You know what I think is really exciting about the U.S.'s approach, and I'm sure if you ever had Amy Schmitz on, who's the head of the elite programs at USA Triathlon, he would tell you that they're not committing to any single approach. They're actually trying to diversify.
Right.
And the proof in that has been like the success of the collegiate recruitment program to get Katie, to get Gwen. Whereas, you know, they came in late, but then you looked at Sarah True. Mm-hmm. Sarah True actually came through as a junior and was a youngster in the
right.
sport.
Right. Yep.
Her coach at the time, Steve Kelly, when she was coming up, I was just at the Olympic Training Center back in November, and he spoke to the juniors that we were there for, and he said that he never, ever would have imagined that she would become the athlete that she has. You know, so he was really impressed with her development, and he attributes it to her success and commitment level and love for the sport through time. So I think they've really found that it's really not just about one approach, especially in a country where we're so diverse in our populations and where we're at. All the other types of athletes that go into other sports and then get burned out, that could come to us different with varying backgrounds. We feel like it's better to have a multifaceted approach. So I think you're going to continue to see a lot of different backgrounds of elite athletes that are coming up through to Olympic qualifying. Ben Canute is another one. You know, he came through the junior ranks. Lucas did as well. But then, you know, you looked at, Hunter Kemper never did.
He came from Iron Kids, and he ran at Wake Forest, and then then he became four-time Olympian.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So you've got just these different approaches. Ben Canute was probably the first athlete who was like, you know what, I'm going to go to college, but I'm not going to compete in a Division I sport or in any collegiate sport. I'm going to focus on triathlon while I go to the University of Arizona. And he just missed our Olympic team. So, you know, you just have all these very different types of approaches. And I see USA Triathlon strategy being, you know, let's not cut anyone out. Let's really try to spread this out and be smart and really try, you know, in the ways that can bring these athletes out, you know, to the surface and really be a part of this and be successful, but not block out or shelter any sort of pipeline that could be very successful.
So in Triathlon 2.0, data-driven performance training, when you say 2.0, people are like, okay, this is revolutionary. This is a change in the way we've been training. What are the changes that you have noticed through the last couple of years in the way people are training for short and long distance triathlon?
Well, when I really sat down, and I have a blog post that I'm going to put on my website tomorrow that actually kind of tells the story of how the book came about, I actually sat down and started to wonder, what does it take? Where do I stack up on the bike compared to the top elites in the world for Ironman? Mm-hmm. And at watt per kilo at threshold and their actual threshold powers and things. So I started to really look at that, study it, and I found it was pretty interesting. As I put the higher watt per kilos, on a scale, I also put accomplishments on the right. And as I went down the list, the accomplishments, list got smaller and smaller and smaller. I was like, this is kind of this power profile chart of what it really takes to be successful and where do you need to be? And I thought, that's really interesting. And then I started to think, man, this would be incredible info for an athlete who's, a 43-year-old female who wants to go to Kona.
Right.
What does she have to do? What watt per kilo does she need to get at? What's her threshold pace need to be? How much training does she need to do? What does her, using some terms that we use that I use from Training Peaks, like CTL, chronic training load, acute training load, training stress balance metrics and things like that. But really they're saying, okay, what are the metrics that I need to pay attention to? What are the thresholds that I need to hit on these? And once I hit this threshold, the chances of me, accomplishing the goal has gone up, whether that's to qualify for Kona or whether that's to finish, finish an Ironman, because certainly people that want to finish probably need to know what that's going to take. So I really started to break it down and say, okay, this is training with technology, using a power meter and a GPS, and training and knowing what you need to do to accomplish your goal. So it's all gender-based, goals-based, and age-based. So if you're a 65-year-old male versus a 25-year-old male, what's the watt per kilo you need at threshold? What's the threshold pace you need to be able to hold in your running? They really increase that. Swimming varies a lot, and I talk about that in the book, but, you won't find in this book any sort of training plans. But what it will tell you, I teach athletes about metrics, which ones are important based on what they're trying to train for. If they feel like, okay, I really got to just build my aerobic tension, well, then here's the metrics, and then how much do you need to improve it? Well, here's the threshold based on how old you are, your gender, and what your goals are. So it's really, really just saying, just really simplifying it for athletes. And so many athletes don't want a training plan nowadays. They just want to do their normal routine, their structure, their week. They want to go ride with their friends. They want to do this. They just want to know, hey, is it working? Is it not working? Do I need to take a rest right about now? Do I not need to take a rest? When can I maybe shift and start doing some longer rides or things like that? So the book really helps athletes identify.
Of the athletes you've coached over the years, I know you coach age group athletes as well as pros. Is there one success story that even surprised you?
Oh, sure. Oh, man. I coached one gentleman. Always, yeah. Seemed like when the Ironman lottery was going on, always about the next few days afterwards, I'd get a few phone calls.
Sure.
Hey, I've never done a triathlon in my life. I saw the Ironman on TV. I entered the lottery and I got in. So I need your help.
And it's April and the race is October, and I don't know how to swim, bike, or run.
Yeah, and I don't have a bike.
Right, yeah, that's great.
We got some work to do. I've had a number of those. I got one guy who the very first workout he did was you're just going to go out and you're just going to jog 20 minutes easy. And he ruptured his plantar fascia on that 20-minute first run.
Oh, my God.
So you can imagine. And he finished, so it was great. And then I've had guys, I've put two guys in the top eight in Kona in their age group that, came to me as, 10, 11 hour guys.
Wow.
And in a matter of a few years, really, really jumped up. Now, But I can tell you, Bob, it's not any sort of secret. These guys are just very dedicated. They're very consistent. They don't miss workouts. You know, they're really become invested in, you know, in their training. You know, they use technology and they learn about it, and that's, you know, and I use a lot of their examples in the book. I even use some pros, some of Matt Dixon's pros that he's coached for a while, in the book as well, kind of showing some stuff since I was helping him a few seasons ago with Meredith Kessler and things.
One of the things that we were just talking about this from a running perspective, you know, Ryan Hall just retired, and you know, I remember Frank Shorter was on the show once talking about, as a pro, you're going to have a window about six great seasons, you know, 6 years where you are at your peak, and it's just very difficult for somebody to have more than those. Now, obviously, Meb Keflezighi is a different animal. Through technology, can we extend that? Through the knowledge that we're gaining from numbers, because I see people, you know, they're doing so many races in a short period of time and they just burn out and they're gone. And I just wonder if technology and what you're doing with Triathlon 2.0 can help elongate that peak level of racing that sometimes goes away after that 5-6 years.
Yeah, you know, technology is not going to prevent you from making poor decisions.
So, that's not going to make you get you away from doing 5 or 6 Ironman races in a year.
Exactly, or 4 marathons in a year. So, you know, it takes some logical, sensible choices. You need good mentorship. You need the right people helping guide you through what you're doing. People have experience, especially as you go up. I think that was probably Ryan Hall's biggest problem. He just didn't have the right guidance. You know, he made some bad choices and some things that he's done, and I'm sure that he would take back, and, you know, and it's cost him his career in a lot of ways. You know, I think he was always trying, you know, he probably always felt like every time he went to the race, he had to be at his best.
Right.
And it had to be an awesome performance. Like, no, you don't need to be that way. I think that's really been Meb's success. Meb's, you know, you look back on it, Meb's never really had a bad race.
No, he's especially on the big stage.
Mm-hmm. He shows up. Like, that's not saying he never finished, you know, he's always on the podium. That's not the case. But he's up there. He's competitive and he does things right. You know, and guess who he's had? He's had one of the greatest distance running coaches possibly in American history, in Bob Larson.
Yes.
You know, through his entire career, from the time he showed up at UCLA, I mean, Bob was there this weekend, you know. So, he's had great guidance and leadership. Now, what technology can do to help us is we can learn from mistakes in the past, especially as you begin to gather this data. You can go back and look and see where do we increase the load too much that we got a negative training response. And as you begin to look at that, it takes away a lot of the emotion judgment. You know, the facts are the facts. You know, you can lay it out and see, well, you know, fitness was improving here. Things were going great. And then I got hurt. Well, I got hurt. And it also coincided with this huge jump in volume.
Yes.
That I did, you know, that I clearly wasn't prepared for. Those are the types of things that you can learn from. So I think if athletes embrace technology a lot, that will definitely happen. If they're not willing to do that, then chances are that if they don't have the right guidance and leadership, that can really challenge them.
So you're coaching in Coronado now in terms of a swim program?
Yes, I'm one of the new head coaches for varsity swim at Coronado High School, yep.
So as a swim coach, and obviously there's a lot of tradition associated with being a running coach and a swim coach in terms of volume and things like that, is it difficult to come in and say, listen, I'm coming from I'm going to bring something totally different to the table here? Or is there just certain expectations that, hey, you have to swim X amount of yards or X amount of meters to become great? Has that changed over the years?
Oh, it's absolutely changed. In fact, I probably train kids less now than I did even just a few years ago. Specificity is the key, Bob. You know, swimming, believe it or not, especially in high school swimming, is very much like track and field.
Yes.
You know, there's so many events, and
yep.
You've got distance swimmers, you've got sprinters, One of the kids I'm really excited to work with at Coronado High School is a young man named Riley Ferguson. Who's, he went 20.5, I want to say. It was ridiculously fast last year. He's probably one of the fastest high school 50-yard freestylers in the country.
Wow.
I know that he's taking some college visits now, so looking at some SEC schools and things. So he's a guy that I can't just throw in and take the sprinter and go do a lot of volume on either. So, in such a technical sport like swimming, you've got to be very, very concentrated in your approach and effective with what you're doing. If you just have them do a lot of volume and they're swimming, with very poor technique, you can actually create injuries. That's one of the challenges you face when, I'm already seeing, I've got some kids coming into the program that are going to start, we're going to start on Tuesday here that I've already told me, yeah, I've kind of got this knee injury. I tore my labrum in my shoulder. I'm like, wow, okay. Well, we're going to have to be very careful. But,
right.
That's one of the great things about swimming. If you really focus on the technical side. And believe it or not, that's what Run with Power is really showing me. Friel, one of the things Friel actually, when he was looking at reading the book, he kept coming back to me and saying, okay, Jim, I really like Efficiency Index, and you've shown me some things that I can do to affect it, but how can I really improve it in my training? And I said, Joe, I don't have an answer for you. First of all, the technology is so new. Number one, that's like saying, how do you improve your golf swing?
Yeah, yeah, right. You can practice all day, but unless you got the right instruction, it's mm-hmm. not going to work. Yeah. You can't just kind of doing it over and over again doesn't make you better.
Exactly. There's some biomechanical things, some technical things. And even then, in the book, I had to be careful because I can't say do this technique because, I look at Lucas Rosmikus.
Yes.
He has a long, loping stride. He's not a super high cadence runner, so to speak.
Right.
And then you've got Leo Manzano, who is just super, turnover, short legs and very fast and, you'd never think so. You try to coach them the same way. You don't necessarily know that you're actually going to help them. So it becomes very individual dependent.
Probably one of the biggest frustrations for me is when I look at high school, more track and field and cross country. When I see a lot of high school coaches just having these kids running 80 to 100 miles a week while they're in high school. Drives me a little crazy because a lot of these kids don't see college, right? And they burn out very young. And I remember talking to Coach Bobby McGee, who works with Gwen Jorgensen, and him saying that Gwen is running faster now and doing a lot of her anaerobic work on the bike. Probably if there's one sport where I think coaches tend to overdo, it's running at the high school and collegiate level. Is that accurate, or is that just too broad a brush?
Well, it's again, I think it's very athlete independent. I've seen programs that have been very successful. Joe Newton at York High School was a very, very high mileage program, and they won a lot of championships in that state. And, and he had some kids go on to Stanford and do some, have some decent careers. Now, did I think that the number that he put out was proportionate with the success of his program? Probably not. But I think, you look at long, slow distance and linear type-based training from back in the day, and you realize now that Alan Webb, I think, was pretty much one of the first guys that really changed the game. His coach really seemed to say, no, we're not going to go with a high volume thing. We're going to start with speed work. We're really going to work speed and then build some strength on top of that. But we're going to make intensity and speed our main first focus. And that really set him up for a long career. And that's really the type of approach I've taken. And I think that's really the approach that Bobby's talking about, where you can do a lot of your high intensity on the bike. When they go out and run, there's a lot of low risk in the running they do. One of the things that Kevin McDowell just got fourth at the U23 Worlds, Pan Am Games silver medalist, cancer survivor, leukemia survivor, or lymphoma, I think. Uh, he at that camp that I was with our juniors at the Olympic Training Center in November, he was really talking about his coach, John Hall, he has a new 4-minute run, 1-minute walk. And he builds through the season a 9-minute run, 1-minute walk. Because he swore it really kept him pretty good. And I thought that was bogus.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And, you know, on me coming from a running background, running at the University of Nebraska, and having an Olympian for a roommate, and, you know, NCAA champions and things on my team, I didn't believe it. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go try this. And I tell you what, I went out and did it. And it was amazing how much better I felt. I recovered from my work and my run workouts. I've just been like, man, there's really something to this. So, you know, it's not, you know, I think volume can be done in that way. It's probably better. You know, it's a lot safer. It's just, you know, the approach. And this is the great thing about, this is what I love about technology and training nowadays is technology can tell us how effective our training is. So when we do creative things like that, we change the way we approach training. We can actually see the results. That's what Triathlon 2.0 is all about. You know, choose the plan that's best for you. Be creative. Go out and do it. And then let the data tell you how you're doing. Are you really being effective? And that's the way I believe, that's the way I approach all training. You know, I'm taking data even on the swim deck. I don't have power meters, but I got splits and things like that and workouts that I can test sets, and I'm constantly assessing, are we improving? Are we not improving? So I think a higher volume approach is okay, as long as it just really depends on how much intensity you're going to put into it and how much you build the athlete. And then you got to obviously take in the athlete's individual background. If they were a soccer player coming in, they don't need as much speed work. They just need aerobic strength. Go out and run them. You know, if they're a kid getting off the couch, never done anything, you probably can't do that. You know, you probably need to focus more on building some basic coordination and speed development. So again, it comes back to the individual athlete, but I think technology can really help with that. And it takes a good coach.
Well, and that's, I remember Coach Larson's philosophy was always, I want my kids running 10 years after I work with them, right? It wasn't, hey, I'm here to win titles in high school and college, and you know, your longevity doesn't really matter to me. One of the things that always frustrates me is, like you mentioned, you can build up do a lot of the anaerobic works on the bike. I've always been surprised that high school running coaches, you know, don't get some, you know, trainers, those bike trainers out on the track, and you know, actually incorporate some cycling with, you know, not so much putting them on a road, but doing some workouts on stationary bikes at the track to keep their kids from all the pounding that so many of them do. I see so many stress fractures with especially the high school girls, and you just wonder if these guys would start incorporating a little swimming, a little cycling, these kids can be better. I mean, Lucas Verzbikas was running maybe, what, 30, 35 miles a week. And he was a triathlete when he, you know, broke the sub four minutes and went 8:29 for the 2 mile. So we know that the cross training works. I feel like the running coaches are going to be the last bastion of sanity, the last guys to come over to the other side and realize that they can use cross training to help people's running.
Oh, I agree. It's really hard to ask them. When they come from such a, you know, most of your running coaches have come from traditional running,
right?
Running things. And it's funny, I actually wrote a post about this a couple of years ago when I was actually at UCSD coaching University City High School. And this older woman asked me as practice was over, she's like, oh, so did you swim in college? I said, no, ma'am. She said, oh, did you swim in high school? No, ma'am. She was like, well, how are you a swim coach then?
Right.
I was like,
right.
Well, I swam in triathlon and I learned a lot and learned from some of the best swim coaches in the world about a training approach. And that's how I do it. She was just kind of like, I just don't understand how you can be a swim coach and you never were a competitive swimmer.
Right.
And it's like, you know, they just don't understand that. It's not about where you've been. It's about where you're going, what your focus is, and if you can improve and be creative. It's this new, you know, this influx and new ideas and new periodization models. I mean, I think one of the reasons I don't agree with Brett Sutton and everything he says.
Right.
But you know what? That guy does some stuff that's off the wall, and you know, sometimes it works. So,
hey, well, you look at, you know, Chrissy Wellington, Daniela Reif. You go way back to the athletes that he has had.
And what's his background? His background was training horses.
Exactly.
He was never a triathlete.
No, no.
So it's this new approach, and he's like, okay, well, I bring these new ideas, this new background. And the problem tends to be most of your running coaches don't have that. They came through traditional running programs, and so they're kind of just following the herd. And of course, then there, you know, we have to be honest, Bob, there's certainly some costs involved with providing trainers to ride bikes.
Yes,
and
you're right.
Bike fits, and to be able to effectively train, you know, a number of kids in a high school program with bikes and trainers.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Triathlon 2.0 data-driven performance training comes out tomorrow, which is very cool, and people can pick it up everywhere.
Pretty much, yeah. Should be any of the major retailers online or in a major bookstore. So, yeah, and, it's published by Human Kinetics. And, yeah, and Run with Power will be out May 1, but it's available for pre-order right now. Amazon, I know, and a few others. So,
congrats, Jimmy. You're doing some great stuff.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, looking forward to more.
All right, and with the with this being an Olympic year, and the men's side is wide open on the U.S. side, right? Your Ben Canute can make the team.
I'm hoping. I'm working a little bit with Ben on, you know, some data and stuff. You know, he was so close last year. And I know he's been working, of course, with his coach, Adam Zucco, and Ryan Bolton as well. So he's got a good team of advisors and, you know, working, just really gathering some data, seeing. And so far, his testing's been just continuing to improve, great improvement curve. So, yeah, we're certainly looking forward to hopefully a great day in Yokohama in May.
Love it. Again, Jim Vance has been our guest. We are brought to you by Ironman U, everysite.com, the coolest new technology around. RunCatalina.com. You can check out Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes or Babbittville. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.
With housing for women, the government of the Republic has ensured the homes